All right, we're back just like that. Welcome in. Game Plus Network, Mean Streets here live on FTN Network. Also, Game Plus Network, Chris Meany here with you. We're off to a roaring start on a Wednesday, aren't we, Paul? Bats right off the top. Not really sure what happened there. Paige just went away. Now we're back live here on a Wednesday. Appreciate you guys hanging out. If you are hanging out here live with us, smash the like button. You have any comments, any questions, you guys know the drill by now. You can leave them there watching live. You can leave them there. I'll try to address them throughout the show. And if you're watching on Game Plus Network, you can hop on over and leave a question there as well. It is we're getting pretty close to fantasy hockey playoffs. We're just a handful of weeks away. I see some people. The conversation is starting to start in the Discord when it comes to fantasy hockey playoffs. And we're going to have a draft guide live very soon. Just not a draft guide, just like a fantasy playoff guide will be live very soon. We'll take care of the people trying to get a fantasy hockey championship. NBA All-Star weekend. Yes, we won't talk any NBA All-Star stuff here today, but we will talk about that through the end of the week probably. I saw some of the competition, the skill stuff was announced just the other day. Today though, we're going to cover all the sports. We are going to cover a little NBA. We got some NHL picks and some props. Man, yesterday was really good in terms of sides. We went 6-for-6 on Dangle Batselli. We nailed a lot of the sides. We had the upset with the Blues at home. We did squeak a couple out. You know, you got to get a little bit lucky. The Jets won an extra time. The Bruins won an extra time. The Lightning won an extra time. So we were on the right side of some of those close games. We'll look to bounce back today, get some NHL picks and some props a little bit later on. Kyle Murray's in the house of FTN. He's going to drop by in a little bit. It's the Genesis Invitational. Tiger Woods getting it done this weekend. Oh, I don't know if he's going to get it done, but he's going to play. I saw 175-1 for him to win on Monday. I think 130-1. Use our prop shop. He's plus 160 to make the cut. He is 28-1 to finish top five, 12-1 finish top 10, and he is 5-1 to finish top 20. We'll get into Woods. It's a strong field. It's a really strong field. Of course, you got Scottie Scheffler, who was great last week, and you know, took it down again at the Waste Management Open. And then we also have Rory and John Rahm. So it's a really good field here this weekend, and it's nice to see Tiger. It's been a long time since we've seen him in a PGA event here. So we will break that down, talk a little PGA, some picks, some outright picks, some DFS stuff, and also we will talk maybe a little NBA with Kyle, some props, see who he's thinking, and we will continue the fantasy baseball talk. We will get into round three of high stakes leagues, NFBC, just taking a look at the average drafts over the last 4 weeks, high stakes leagues. People are putting their hard earned bucks on this. So we looked at round one on Monday, round two yesterday. Today, we will take a look at round three and a look at the players who are going in round three. And that's when we start to see a couple closers get taken off the board. The first couple yesterday, we saw the first catcher and two pitchers, no pitchers at all in the first round, just the two pitchers in the second round. I think it was Gerrit Cole and Corbin Burns. And then we had JT Realmuto as a catcher. We said basically to avoid the pitching and the catching that early on. I like to start to target some pitchers into the fourth, fifth round. But, you know, as people were well aware, those hitters dry up pretty early, especially at the outfield position. I don't feel like it's that deep of a position. And there's a lot of pitchers I like in between, like, my rankings of 20 and 30. A couple things before we bring in Kyle, I wanted to say off the top. Eric Bieniemy, what does this guy have to do to get a head coaching job or an offensive coordinator position other than with Kansas City? And does he want to leave Kansas City to be the OC in Washington, which some reports suggest this morning that he is scheduled for an interview with the Commanders? Does he want to leave that position in Kansas City to go to Washington? No, this guy wants a head coaching position, and I don't understand why he doesn't have one. What does he have to do to get one? I don't get it. He's got two Super Bowls. Everybody wants to talk about Andy Reid being, a fantastic play caller and a head coach. And he is. He's going to go down as one of the best of all time. He's got the second most postseason wins, got three Super Bowls. We've talked about Andy Reid for 2 weeks, about him being an absolute stud and a monster. What did he say after the game a couple times? I noticed it right away after the game when he was interviewed after the Super Bowl. And then on the desk with the NFL Network crew, he just gave love to Eric Bieniemy. And you saw some of the play calling, like, Andy Reid is, like, he's an absolute genius, you know, with the red zone motion. You know, if you go back and watch the Eagles, some of their games, certainly for me, I mean, I have it printed in my head. I've watched them all year. The game against the Jags, the motion, Christian Kirk touchdown, you go back and watch it. I think it was from week 4 or 5. It was the exact same play in motion. Christian Kirk wide open. Doug Peterson under Andy Reid. Maybe it was an Eric Bieniemy thing. It doesn't even really matter if it was his play call or not. This guy has been to 5 straight AFC championship games. He's won 2 Super Bowls. I saw a tweet from somebody on social media with like this guy going through this obstacle course on one leg backwards, balancing a ball in his head, juggling, going through all these beams. And it's like, hey, that's Eric Bieniemy. This is what you need to do to get a head coaching job. Yesterday, the Eagles lost their offensive coordinator and their defensive coordinator. Jonathan Gannon went to Arizona, and Steve Steichen went to the Indianapolis Colts. Eagles fans are going to miss Steve Steichen. Heck of a play caller. Still pretty raw, but you know, you heard him in the press conference, and I think Colts fans have to be fired up hearing him in the press conference talking off the top like, you know, we're going to throw early, we're going to score points, we're going to run to win games, and that's really what he did in Philadelphia. They were aggressive early all year long. You saw how aggressive they were in the Super Bowl as well. Try to run the game out. You know, they didn't have success in that game, but all year they really did. What's the deal with Jonathan Gannon? Why is this guy getting a head coaching job? The defense was great in Philadelphia this year. It was pretty decent in the second half of last season, but I think it was more about the personnel and the players. He was very conservative. He didn't make any adjustments in the Super Bowl. He didn't get a stop in the second half at all. I'm very curious. The guy's been a defensive coordinator for a couple years. He really doesn't have a lot of experience, you know, as a quote unquote leader. Maybe I'm wrong in saying this, but I was very shocked to see him get a head coaching job over Eric Bieniemy, over Lou Anarumo, who's done some really good things with Cincinnati over the past couple of years, has shown that he can stop a Patrick Mahomes offense. I was really, really surprised with that. I don't know. If I'm an Arizona fan, I tread with caution. I don't know if he's going to be great for Kyler Murray. He's not an offensive mind. Maybe that's what Kyler needs. Maybe, you know, get away from a head coach and, you know, have a couple different quarterback coach and an OC kind of work with those guys as opposed to the head coach. But didn't love the hire. Just think it's pretty disrespectful for some other guys. And just saying, that's all I'm going to say. That's the rant off the top. Thought it was a little shocking, to be honest. Like, not for Steichen to get a job, but for Gannon to get a job. Not just because he was awful in the Super Bowl. Not just because of that. Ask most Eagles fans what they think of Jonathan Gannon. But good luck to you, sir, and Steve Steichen as well, as all the head coaching jobs are now filled across the league. But as of this morning, did see a report, Eric Bieniemy scheduled for an interview in Washington to be the OC. Sounds like a downgrade to me. We're going to talk Derek Carr, 5 potential landing spots. We got some PGA, we got some NHL, we got some NBA. We got it all happening, baseball as well, here on Mean Streets. Keeper Lock, Kyle Murray's in here next. What's going on? Welcome back in Mean Streets here live on Game Plus Network. Chris Mead is bringing in Kyle Murray. It's been a heck of a Wednesday morning already. We started the show. I closed the StreamYard window. Had to restart the show. Had a little bit of a rant off the top. I mean, the Eagles losing their offensive coordinator and their defensive coordinator in the last 24 hours has got me fired up. Not so much about losing Gannon. I was just pretty shocked. Like, guys like Eric Bieniemy can't find a head coaching job, and like Lou Anarumo has done some really good stuff with the Bengals as well, but I digress. I just saw a video of Tiger Woods putting on a beanie today, warming up, and that gets me fired up. Like he's ready to go here, Kyle. Genesis Invitational. What's going on, man? Welcome in.
Yeah, I got him over the shoulder here back yeah, when he won his most recent Masters. So pumped to see him back in action here. Obviously, this is his event. So I guess we probably should have it circled on the calendar, but it's his first time at a non-major since I think late 2020. So it's been a long time. It's been a minute. Obviously, we haven't seen him since July of 2022 when he was at I think it was the British Open there. So it's been a while, but good to see him back. And obviously, at a non-major, kind of tells you that maybe he's a little bit healthier, a little bit ready to go. But obviously, his tournament. So really, I guess no surprise that this is the event that he picked.
Yeah, I think it was like 800 days or something like that. You said 2020. Yeah. That's a long, long time since we've seen him here on a non-major, as you point out. Like, what do we really expect from him? I saw on Monday it was 175 to 1, and you know people are going to bet that stuff down. This is Tiger, right? I see in our prop shop 130 to 1. I see a make the cut plus 160, top 5 28 to 1, top 10 12 to 1, top 25 to 1. What's the expectations here? Just for him, I suppose he would tell you that I would just like to see if I can, you know, walk the course and be healthy for 2 rounds and see if my body can hold up for maybe the weekend. But what do you think the expectations really are for Tiger this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think from like a betting and a DFS perspective, it's really important to like separate the bias and what's smart here, because
the resume.
Exactly. I mean, the guy hasn't played a non-major in years, literal years. And obviously he's come out and said he still hasn't walked, you know, 72 holes yet. You know, he doesn't feel comfortable doing it. So like, I guess if you really want to sweat Tiger, him making the cut, I guess, would be the best way to do it, I would say. Just because, again, like we've seen him play two decent rounds at the Masters and at the Open there. Yeah. So I think that's the best way to do it if you wanted to do it. But for me, it's just enjoying him being back on the course. I don't want to say it's like a ceremonial thing, because I don't think Tiger himself would allow him to play and not go out there and give it his all and compete. Just that's kind of who he is. But it does feel like he's out here because it's his tournament. Obviously, he's going to try to do his best. But from a DFS and betting perspective, I will be staying away.
Yeah, it's probably a good call. People love Tiger. Everyone, so I'm sure somebody out there wants to sprinkle a little something, something in the top 20, or maybe for him to make the cut. He does have 82 wins. A friendly reminder, I saw that tweeted out from the PGA Tour account, tied with Sam Snead in there. Still needs one more for that all-time record. I think he's going to get it. I do. I think he's going to get it this weekend. But I think he's going to get it at some point. Yeah, I think we would all love that. Okay, let's talk. You know, legitimate guys here that are actually going to win. And George made this board for me last night, and he put a lot of dudes on it. As you can see, Quan, when we chuck it up, a lot of good players here, right? The field is good again, back to back weeks. You got Rahm up at the top at 7-1, Rory at 10-1, Scotty Scheffler got it done last week at 10-1, Schauffele at 14-1. I don't know what it is about Xander, man. I feel bad for this guy. He's always hanging around on the weekend, and then he just can't find a way to get it done. JT at 15, Finau at 18, Morikawa in there at 21-1, Jordan Spieth at 29-1. We got Sam Burns at 30-1. My guy, Willie Z, love me a little, Zalatoris at 34-1. Jason Day was hanging around over the weekend as well at 37-1. Hideki down here at 37 as well. Some pretty good numbers here, Kyle, because of this this field. It's strong.
Yeah, very strong field for sure. We're obviously in one of the more important swings of the season here, obviously with two back-to-back weeks of really strong fields. Got everybody that, you know, that you recognize here, essentially. So, and the one thing about the board here is, like, you're seeing a lot of low numbers, like 7-1, two guys at 10-1. It's just because these are, you know, the three best golfers in the world right now. It's just, you know, it just goes to show how strong the top of the board is. So it makes it difficult at times to price some of these guys out. But, you know, for this course and for this week, I do like Rory quite a bit here. I think he fits this course extremely well. I think that people who can hit the ball extremely far are going to be at an advantage here, just because there's not a ton of penalty areas to worry about, and they don't grow out the rough very thick. So, you know, if you do miss a fairway, which the fairways here are fairly difficult to hit, but they're not really penalizing you for missing fairways. So guys who are able to just, you know, bomb away, I think, are going to have a benefit here. And to an extent, pretty much all the guys up top have that ability to an extent. Obviously, people have advantages, like Rory has that over pretty much the entire field here, distance-wise. But I do think guys who can hit it a little bit further than the field are going to have a significant advantage here. And obviously, John Rahm can do the same. Both those guys are top five in driving distance, with you know, Rahm being fifth and Rory being first in the field here. But in terms of what I think stands Rory apart from Rahm here in this spot is his around the green game. It's been fantastic over the last 6 months, ranking seventh in this field. And again, very strong field. But, you know, Rory's first in tee to green, first and off the tee, second in total strokes gained, third in ball striking, and seventh in around the green. I think around the green play is going to be very important, because these greens, although they are, you know, fairly sizable, difficult to hit at times. So when you are, you know, missing the green, you need to be able to scramble around, and Rory can do that with the best of them.
Yeah, certainly can. I agree. The short game has been real nice dating back to the past couple of years. And, you know, a 10-1 is not awful either, right? I know we try to seek some value and find it, but 10-1 is not bad. I mean, you hit that, Rory wins. You're not going to be too upset about that play at all. What do you think about Zalatoris and Day in around that 34-37 spot? I feel like we've talked a lot of Day here to start the season, which, you know, hasn't been the case for the past couple of years. But he's, you know, I heard him over the weekend talk about his, you know, his swing change and just like being better on his body and just being able to play pain-free, Kyle, which goes a long way, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. That's obviously a big thing for him. And it's good to see some of the guys who, you know, were so crucial back in, you know, the early days of my, at least PGA experience, and, you know, Day and Ricky Fowler getting it back together on the course. And then now Tiger making return. It's a good time for sure. But yeah, I do like Day quite a bit here. I do think, again, his number is, it's a bit, like, it feels strange because, yes, he's been playing some excellent golf, but in terms of, you know, trusting him again, it does feel a little difficult at that sort of number. But again, I do have some interest in him. I would prefer Zalatoris at that number. We've seen Willie Z play this event the last two years there, 26th place last year. And back in 2021, he had a 15th place finish. You know, his around the green game is kind of the downfall. And obviously, people love to talk about his putting stroke and whatnot. But when you look at his putting stats, they really aren't that bad. Like, I get that it's been brutal because, like, when he misses those short ones, it just looks so ugly. But he's 24th in this field over the last 6 months in strokes gained putting. So when you're talking about one of the best fields that we've seen all year and him ranking 24th, that's really not a bad number. You're going to have a handful of guys in this on the screen that are worse putters. So terms of Zalatoris, I really do like him. And again, he's a guy who can bomb it off the tee. He's seventh in strokes gained off the tee as well, 12th in the field and distance. And when you look at three-putt avoidance, he's the best in this field at avoiding three-putts. So, and that's a big thing here for me as well, is not getting yourself into too much trouble on the greens. And Will Zalatoris has done a good job of doing that, even though when you see the clips on Twitter and Instagram, it looks ugly because his backstroke on the short putts is not, you know, it's not by the book. But again, like, those numbers don't line up with what you see on video. So Will Zalatoris is definitely one of my favorites as well in this range.
I think it's just overblown. Yeah, it's magnified because when he misses, it's so ugly, and just the way he goes about the putter stroke, it does make me feel a little uneasy. I mean, I bet him every weekend. I'm not even gonna lie. I bet him every week, almost every week that the guy's playing. And every time I watch him putt, I'm nervous. I am nervous. But
don't blame you.
You just said it. Like, you just said it. It's, you know, the 3-point avoidance, like things like that are super key. And I think it's just magnified because he does a lot of good things well. And if you're going to pick apart his game, that's kind of where you start. What are some of the statistics you're looking at? You mentioned like strokes gain. All those things are obviously very important. But when you're putting together some DFS lineups, does any of these statistics kind of like make your models pop? Like, give me a name or two that maybe you didn't know you'd like, but you do like maybe a little bit.
Yeah, this week it's mostly about ball striking for me, because again, I mentioned that I do think it's important to have a solid around the green game for when you do miss the green. But in terms of where I think golfers can gain that advantage on the field, is it's ball striking. Obviously, off the tee is going to be important with the lack of penalty areas and the lack of just penalizing players for missing the fairway. So, you know, being able to hit it far is going to be an advantage, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, necessary to win. It's just something that I would prefer. But yeah, ball striking is going to be key for me this week. So a couple of guys that stand out from that, you know, standpoint, you know, Will Zalatoris, he's top five in ball striking. Rory, we talked about, he's third in ball striking, like I mentioned. Tony Finau, just shortly behind Zalatoris, he ranks seventh in ball striking over the last 6 months there. So Finau I like a lot. You know, he had the strong finish here a couple of years ago. I think it was the playoff against Max Homa when Max Homa won. This tournament's bittersweet to me because one of my favorite golfers previously on PGA Tour won this event last year, Joaquin Niemann. Amazing ball striker, sadly left for live. So that's been a bummer. It's been something hard on my heart over the last few months here because he's just one of my favorite golfers. Don't get to watch him anymore, but he goes to show ball striking is, you know, very important. Max Homa did a good job with ball striking. His ball striking has been incredible over the last year or so. But a guy that you mentioned that, you know, in terms of a name that you wouldn't expect to see, I have two names that are kind of completely off the wall, but guys who really elevate their games based on ball striking, and two guys who have been playing fairly decent at times. We saw Johnny Vegas up at the top of the leaderboard at times last week. He's eighth in this field in ball striking. And then another name that I like, Nick Hardy, I believe he is 12th in terms of strokes gained ball striking over the last 6 months. He has three straight made cuts, four out of his last five. Again, tough to bet these guys to win in this sort of event where there's so many elite names. But again, top 20, top 10, if you want to really, you know, take a risk there. But I would say looking at these guys in the top 20 mark is pretty appealing.
Yeah, and you and I were chatting a little bit as well. I mean, you mentioned to me Montgomery and Keegan. Like, are those guys that you would consider for potential long shots? You're right. It is tough because of the field being so strong. But you think one or two of those guys could maybe be, hanging around on Saturday or moving day to kind of, you know, maybe there's an hedge opportunity, or, you know, maybe those odds will get shorter, you know, if they do make it past the cut, or make the cut rather.
Yeah, for sure. I like Keegan a lot. You know, he's got back-to-back finishes inside the top 20. I feel like last week he kind of let it slip away. He was playing some really good golf there on day one. And then it's just so difficult at times when you deal with those delays, and then, you know, players have to, you know, stop playing around in the middle of the day and then pick it up the next day. It's very difficult, at least to like judge the overall performance. Like two guys that stood out last week that I think got kind of a disadvantage based on the delays were Keegan and Sungjae Im. Sungjae Im had to stop an elite round. He was like six under at the turn, then comes out in the middle of day three, which was the, you know, his start of the second round of the back half, and bogeyed three straight. Keegan Bradley did a similar thing. It wasn't as extreme, but those, it's tough to really get a feel on how these guys are actually, you know, being affected by that. But I would say that Keegan Bradley could have had a top 10, maybe even a top five last week if he really was able to pull together all four rounds. He still, you know, squeaked out with a T20. We know that Keegan's going to be a good ball striker as well, and he gets the same sort of narrative of the putting. But again, he's sixth in three putt avoidance there, and he's actually 19th in bogey avoidance as well. And a lot of that is because of ball striking. Like, it's fairly easy to avoid three putts when you're ball striking so good, and you can put it closer than the rest of the field. But just in general, again, he's a guy that I think can benefit from the elite ball striking. Does have the short game issues at time, not necessarily the greatest around the green player, but he has a very similar kind of profile to Will Zalatoris, but, you know, not necessarily as elite of a ball striker, but still very good. As for Montgomery, you know, he can hit it far, and he can putt potentially with the best of them. He's arguably the best putter on tour already. Over the last 2 years, he's number one in strokes gained putting. And again, he doesn't necessarily have the full 2 year data, but when you're looking at the last year or so, Taylor Montgomery in strokes gained putting, number one. So he's arguably already the best putter on tour. 16th in strokes gained total here. Again, he doesn't have necessarily the ball striking that we like to see with the irons there, 104th in terms of approach. So I'm fairly worried about that. But if it's a good approach week for him, he's going to find the hole with the putter there. So Taylor Montgomery is someone that I definitely have interest in.
80-1 over at BetMGM, 65-1 on DK. But yeah, Prop Shop's your friend. He gets some nice juicy odds there. FanDuel hanging 65 as well. Bet Rivers at 70-1. Yeah, man, it was weird to see Frost at the Waste Management Open in Arizona. Like, what world are we living in here? It was snowing the other day in Vegas. It was like a blizzard going on. And then Frost at the Waste Management Open. I know it gets cold at the desert, but, you know, pretty rare to see the round delayed, and then guys have to, like you said, finish out their round the next day. And that was one of the things Jason Day talked about, like his body just going through a longer day than normal and prepping yourself. And you'd think, it's not that taxing on your body. It is. Like, it's, you're walking the course. It's a lot more shots than you're used to playing, and it can add all up. You mentioned Liv, and it kind of broke my heart. Did you see the commercial that they had, the promo? I saw it last night on Instagram. It's pretty silly. There's a couple nice parts from Bryson, and then, you know, Brooks rolls his eyes. I think it was Brooks on his IG account that I did see it, but it was everyone was just roasting them in the comments nonstop. But I do miss a couple of the guys that are over there. I'm not gonna lie, I do miss a couple of them. I don't love it for the game of golf, to be honest with you. There was something else I think I wanted to add, but I think that's it in terms of golf. Before we get you out of here, busy slate in the NBA. There's a ton of games. Is there a prop or two that stands out? And do you think the Mavs are in trouble? Selfishly, I got to ask you about Kyrie and Luka. You think that's going to work out or what?
I mean, for me, like, I've seen a lot of talk about this, and it's like it can't be worse than just like being stagnant, right? Like,
right.
When you're a team that has someone like Luka, and we see this, like, and I don't want to tear your heartstrings here, but like with the Angels and Otani and Trout, like when you have these elite players and you don't do what it takes to just try to be at that elite level, you're going to look back. And then, like, even at times with the Tigers, like with Miguel Cabrera, like they at times spent a lot of money, but at other times they were a selling team or whatever you want to call it. And you have to at least take these risks to make it count with these elite players. So, like, no offense to Spencer Dinwiddie, I like him as a player, but he was never going to be that number two that you need to win a championship. So sure, it might go poorly. It might go really bad for Kyrie.
Good, yeah.
It's and it, I guess it could look really bad as well if they don't re-sign him and it doesn't work out. But if it does work out, they could be NBA champs and they could re-sign Kyrie to a longer deal and potentially a longer deal at a rate that might be a little bit of a discount just because of how people are viewing Kyrie right now. And again, like we've seen Kyrie be the number two on a championship team before. So again, I don't think it was a bad move at all. I think it was a risk reward move for sure. But at this point in the Mavs stage with Luka, you have to take those risks to try to win championships.
Yeah, let's be honest. You said it perfectly. And that's why I didn't mind the risk, because all I've heard over the past couple of years is, man, Luka's going to leave. If you don't do anything for Luka, yeah. Luka's going to leave. If you don't try to give him some support, he's going to leave. And he clearly okayed this deal. I mean, if he didn't, you know, they wouldn't have made this deal. And they haven't won yet, you know, with both of them. They started off 2-0 without Luka. It was Kyrie, and then they went 0-2, and now they play Denver tonight, which is going to be super tough. But I thought in the fourth quarter, we just saw a little bit of a glimpse of what those two could do, and Kyrie was great. It just so happened it was jokes at the end of the game, because everybody's been saying, I've seen all the memes and the videos, and like both guys pulling on like tires, and this is going to be Luka and Kyrie at the end of the game. This is my ball. And neither one of them wanted to shoot at the end of the game. They just kept passing it to each other. So defensively, probably some issues, but man, I think it's worth the gamble. And if he does walk, you know, they freed up a lot of cap space to kind of get themselves in that free agency market, which will be a good one. Yeah. Not this year, but the next year will be a good one. And that'll be probably their last chance to kind of see if they can build around Luka. What about tonight, though? Any props that anybody stand out tonight on this busy slate? I know you're going to have a lot more in our bet tracker a little bit later on.
Yeah, for sure. I do have a couple. One that stands out to me right now is the Mikal Bridges number, over 20.5 points plus assists. You know, this is a guy who obviously recently traded as well. So I think that in the markets, you can kind of find some uncertainty on the kind of role that a player is going to have, you know, just after a trade. And first game with the Nets, we saw a 27.5% usage rate. Last game, only 21%, but even still, a 21% usage rate is like a 4% increase over his role back with Phoenix. So he's definitely going to have a larger role here, no doubt about that. Spencer Dinwiddie looks to have like the 1A in this sort of team, and then you'll have Cam Thomas on the off the bench. When he's on the floor, he's just going to try to shoot as many times as he can before he gets sat back down in the 20 minutes he's going to play. But other than that, Mikal Bridges is going to have a lot of usage opened up for himself. So like for my model, I have him projected for like a 23% usage rate. It's not a monster number, but again, it's like a 6%, 7% increase off of what we were expecting from him in Phoenix. So I'm liking the numbers that we're seeing here. I have him for 21 points tonight and 4 assists. The assist number might be a little bit high because, again, a lot of that number is based on his back data at Phoenix, and he had a lot of, you know, excellent scores around him there for sure. But even still, I have him getting it done nearly with the points alone. So it's 20.5 for the points plus assist, and I like Bridges for, you know, 21 points alone tonight. He had a bad game last time out, but a great game in his first one as a Net. So and you know, it's viewed as a difficult matchup here against Miami, but they are terrible against three-point shooters. So it's actually a good matchup for Bridges because he gets a lot of his scoring production, you know, behind the three-point arc. So I like Bridges a lot tonight.
I thought the Nets did pretty good considering that it just went out of control like that, man. Like, it looked like, hey, KD's coming back soon. This team was starting to get some momentum, maybe make a run in the East, and then all of a sudden it's just blown up like that. To get, what, 4 firsts, I think, you know, with the KD deal. Like, to get the 4 firsts, and then they flip Crowder for like 5 seconds, so they ended up doing pretty well. And these super teams, they don't last for a long time. I mean, the Suns, KD's getting up there, Paul's getting up there. You know, who knows if Booker's going to hang around come 2029 in a couple of years. That big three may not even be a big three in Phoenix. And maybe the Suns are trash. And, you know, Brooklyn gets a couple nice picks out of it. So I thought they did okay there. Daily Handle is obsessed with Jaden Hardy. I mean, dude's got like 5 points in the last 2 games. I know he's done some really good things with the Mavs, but it does be limited now with Kyrie there and Christian Wood. Like, those are the three guys I think he just kind of chips in. I don't know if he checks any boxes for you, Kyle, but you know, with the trades, I'm sure that it's opened up a lot of value in the DFS and the betting market, right, with some of these other players that have gotten bigger roles, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for Hardy, I think, you know, we saw some nice flashes with, you know, we saw Dinwiddie when the trade first happened and Luka was still out, so we saw some nice flashes from Jaden Hardy. So, obviously, it's nothing that's probably going to change the Dallas team now, but something to potentially sit on and wait on and maybe potentially develop into. So, yeah, I think Hardy has some promise for sure. But in terms of what the betting market and even the DFS market, it's definitely something to be, you know, intrigued about right now, because like I mentioned, Bridges was just one example, but like for even someone like Dinwiddie, you know, the Kyrie and Luka situation, like it's, you know, developing constantly with all these new usage rates, these new roles, even the new, you know, sort of minute projections and stuff like that. So definitely a lot of stuff changing, and that uncertainty might seem uneasy, but it's actually good from a betting perspective, because Vegas has it down, right? They're gonna know what they're doing in terms of the lines they're providing. So uncertainty for them is a potential spot for us to take advantage of.
Daily Handle says he's a PTP, a primetime player. He's telling me potential is off the charts. You're a sharp mind there, Daily Handle. So I'll give you the benefit of the doubt on that one. And Kyle, you did almost make me cry. You were pulling the heartstrings there. I mean, emotional Eagles loss. And we start talking about Kyrie and the Mavs. And then you bring up the Angels. And before I came on my phone, it was like Mike Trout said he's going to do whatever he can to get Shohei to stay. It's going to be, you got to get some wins for Shohei to stay there for sure. Kyle, you're fantastic. You're still running the free trials over at ftndaily.com/free. 3-day trials. Sign up for free. Check out the optimizer in the PGA and the NBA. Check out all Kyle's projections. You check out the rankings. Check out the Discord channel. You got player exposure from a DFS standpoint. All the articles. The guys are going to be with you. They're with you every single day. Content galore over at ftndaily.com/free. Kmer DFS on the Twitter machine. Thank you, Kyle. Good luck with your golf plays and tonight on the hard court, and we'll chop it up again soon. Get you on again for a little MLB preview action. Your Tigers are on the rise. They're on the rise.
Fingers crossed.
They got some exciting players. We're going to turn the page from NBA and PGA to NHL and a little bit of MLB talk as well. Plus top five landing spots for Derek Carr next on Mean Streets. Keep her locked. Welcome back in. I want to thank Kyle Murray there for some great PGA insight, a little NBA action for tonight as well. I'm going to talk about Derek Carr here for just a second. I got top five landing spots for Derek Carr. And I'll recap with like where I feel like I want him to go selfishly, where I think it could be a good spot for him from a fantasy standpoint as well. And it's kind of like sprinkled in here. I do want to say just off the top that I think Derek Carr is a pretty good quarterback. I think last year went very poorly for him, a 60% completion rate. I mean, we all know about the picks, the 14 interceptions in 15 games. And, you know, this team really struggled defensively, the Raiders, but there were a lot of games where they were winning heading into the second half. Is that coaching? Part of it, certainly coaching. I thought they got away from what worked in the first half of a lot of games, like Davante Adams, like Peppard in the first half of games, and then no targets, no catches in the second half of games. Maybe not running out the clock, or maybe not being as aggressive as they were in the first half. And, you know, Josh McDaniels, I'm not a big believer in Josh McDaniels. I didn't really like anything that he had to offer in Denver. I didn't love the hire. I didn't like the fact that he decided to go with the Colts a few years ago, and then he got cold feet and he left the Colts. I thought he really screwed that organization out. I just thought he was a little flaky and unsure of himself. Yeah, he did some great things with the Patriots. Great. Right. I heard people in the NFL say that anybody could coach the Philadelphia Eagles. Anybody could coach the New England Patriots with Tom Brady back in the day, which I don't believe any of those comments are true. But for Derek Carr, I think last year was an outlier. You look at 2021, 4,800 passing yards, a 68% completion percentage through to who? Nobody really. Waller missed a lot of time. Hunter Renfro was the guy there, but Henry Ruggs was, you know, a non-factor. Of course, some off-field issues. He wasn't with the team for the entire season. 2020, 67% completion rate, 4,000 passing yards, just over 4,000. He had 27 passing touchdowns, just 9 picks. In 2019, he had a 70% completion rate, 4,000 passing yards, just 8 picks to 21 touchdowns. Over the course of his career, he has a 65% completion rate. Now, the first 2 years in Oakland weren't his best. I mean, 58%, 61%, picks galore, but 32-13 the 1 year in 2015. And I believe in 2016, he had 28 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. That was the season I believe it was cut short. He had the gruesome leg injury. He still got MVP votes that season. He was still a very good quarterback that year. He had Amari Cooper and he had Michael Crabtree, had two elite wide receivers. I think he's a good quarterback. I think just a new system, you know, with McDaniels, it just didn't really work out. It didn't seem like a good fit. I think he could help a lot of teams out. My number five, I'll go in reverse order. Number five landing spot for Derek Carr. I think this would be a good one. I think it's unlikely. I think Tampa Bay, and I'm with you, Daily Handle says Carr to Tampa. I think they're going to roll out Kyle Trask. I think they're going to go with Trask. But I think the Bucs at number five would be good. It would show me and Bucs fans that they're not going to rebuild. They're going to tough to replace Tom Brady. But they're going to try to replace Tom Brady with a above average quarterback, an accurate quarterback, a capable quarterback with good weapons around him. Do they find a way to lock up Godwin long-term, Mike Evans, right? There's still some good weapons, good backs out of the backfield, whether it's Fournette or Rashad White, the future. There's a lot of nice pieces, Cade Otton there. I think that would be a really decent landing spot. Number four for me would be the Panthers. I don't love it. I think it's okay. You know, they do have some playmakers. I think they need another wide receiver. We saw a little bit from Terrace Marshall Jr. I believe in him maybe as a three, not so much as a two. DJ Moore is a good wide receiver. Let's get him a good, accurate quarterback. It would be the best quarterback that he's ever played with if he went to the Panthers. Frank Reich has done some good things with some quarterbacks over the past few years. Not so much in Indy. You know, he tried to resurrect Carson Wentz, didn't work, but he did some good things with Carson Wentz and Nick Foles en route to a Super Bowl in 2017. And he just hasn't had a whole, he didn't have a whole lot to work with in Indy, right? Like Phillip Rivers and Jacoby Brissett and Matt Ryan, and just wasn't really the answer. And I don't know if Carr is the answer for Carolina. If I'm the Panthers, I'm drafting a guy in the first few picks of this year's NFL draft. Number three would be the Saints. Now, he's been rumored to go to the Saints, of course. You know, he had a couple interviews with them. He decided that he didn't want to accept a trade. Now he's free to sign wherever he wants. I think it would be an okay spot. You know, it's a good team. It's a great defense. The best team that we've talked about so far. Really good defense. The line is all right. You know, Michael Thomas is certainly a question mark. But you do have Chris Olave, who looks like an absolute stud in the NFL. You got some pieces around him. Alvin Kamara may serve a suspension, but he could be all right for this team moving forward. I think it would be a good landing spot. Plus, the division is not great. To get outside of the AFC and go to the NFC is a good spot for him. I think he would be the best quarterback in the division right away. And the Saints would be the best team. They would be my team with Derek Carr under center to win that division, go to the playoffs. So the path is very clear, like we've talked about all week when we look at Super Bowl odds. The NFC path much clearer. That was number three, right? Number two would be the Washington Commanders. Washington Commanders, I don't mind it. Defensive line, decent. Defense got some players, and they got some weapons. Terry McLaurin, I love Jahan Dotson as a player. Curtis Samuel, got a couple backs out of the backfield as well. I think that would be a pretty good spot. Again, you're inside the NFC. Number one for me would be the New York Jets, right? This defense is absolutely elite. They got fantastic playmakers all over the field. They swept the board in terms of offensive and defensive rookie of the years and you could have given some love to Breece Hall as well, but Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore, I'm not ready to close the book on. I love the direction of this team. They've had a lot of great draft picks over the past couple years as well. That would be my favorite landing spot. And if I'm the Jets, get it done. Be aggressive. You can sign him. You don't need to trade assets like Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers would be a better upgrade, but also a lot of drama, and you're going to have to trade some pieces to get Aaron Rodgers. So I would like to see them be aggressive here and get Derek Carr. And it would make the AFC East really, really intense, would it not? With Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills and Tua in Miami and New England, you can never really count out about Bill Belichick and company. And then you have the Jets, who were almost a playoff team with Joe Flacco, Zach Wilson, and Mike White. That would be an upgrade at the quarterback position. I think Garrett Wilson and Elijah Moore would both really, really like that. Plus, Breece Hall is this absolute stud. Michael Carter in the backfield. Defense is legit. I like it. We'll see. Got some NHL picks in here next, though. Keep her locked. A couple picks for you guys. Welcome back in. Mean Streets here live on Game Plus Network. We're rolling through some technical difficulties. I don't know if it's on my end or Kwan's end, but there seems to be a little bit of a delay or so here when it comes to Mean Streets today on a Wednesday. We're getting through it. people, we're getting through it. A handful of games on the ice tonight in the NHL. Austin Matthews returns for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're minus 500 favorites. There's a lot of good teams in good spots here today. And Toronto's one of them playing the Blackhawks tonight. I have no props for the Chicago Blackhawks. I think, you know, if I'm picking one from that game, it would be William Nylander over 3.5 shots. But I really like Vladimir Tarasenko tonight for a point. He's minus 118 for a point over at FanDuel. He's played two games with the New York Rangers. He scored a goal in his first game. He's going to play with Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider tonight. And Mika Zibanejad has goals in four straight games, five over that span. And Chris Kreider, I like him tonight for an assist at plus 180. He's got points in four straight and three apples over that span. And for those over at Bet365, a same game parlay with Kreider, Tarasenko, and Mika Zibanejad pays plus 300. So I have Tarasenko for a point at minus 118 at FanDuel, Kreider for an assist at plus 180 over at FanDuel, and then all three of these guys over at Bet365 to hit the score sheet, and that pays 3-1. A matchup against the Canucks. We picked on the Canucks for, I think, all year. We've been picking on Vancouver. This is a team that, you know, only the Ducks have allowed more goals at 5-5 per 60 than Vancouver over the last 6 weeks of the season. It doesn't matter who's in goal. They've really missed Thatcher Demko, but the defense is not great. We've just been picking on them so much. I don't even know if you guys need me to continue to hammer them. Canucks fans are like, stop it. It's that Simpson gif, right? He's already dead. He's down. Like, stop stomping on him already. But this Canucks team plays to a lot of overs. I think they allowed 7 goals in their last game, right? It was 7 straight games with at least 7 goals. Yes, it's 8 straight games with at least 7 goals scored. I don't think the over hits tonight, as long as Shesterkin's in between the pipes. I don't know if Vancouver does enough in that game, but this is a team that's played to a lot of overs lately and mostly on the wrong side of those overs, right? They've been giving up a lot of those goals. So that's my first play here tonight with the New York Rangers. Alex Tuch and Jeff Skinner, same game parlay, minus 105 over at Bet365 against the Anaheim Ducks. The Anaheim Ducks, right? We've been picking on them as well. I like Alex Tuch over 2.5 shots. You can put Kyle Connor in that same parlay at plus 157 at DraftKings. Connor McDavid. My goodness. Connor McDavid over 3.5 shots and Alex Tuch over 2.5 shots, plus 157. Tuch has been pretty much automatic for the last 2 months of the season. He's hit a lot, including 5 of his last 6 games. And they do have Tage Thompson back on that top line with Tuch and Jeff Skinner. I also have Elias Pettersson and Joel Eriksson Ek. Both of those guys over 2.5 shots. They're juice. Put them into a parlay at plus 160. And then my last one would be Nathan MacKinnon over 4.5 shots. Not breaking any news here with Nate, but it's actually a pretty good price. I have it in the bet tracker. It's from Bet Rivers. It's minus 125 for Nathan MacKinnon over 4.5 shots. So just quickly recap, MacKinnon 4.5 shots, Elias Pettersson and Joel Eriksson Ek over 2.5 shots each at plus 160 at DraftKings. Alex Tuch and Connor McDavid. McDavid's at 3.5 shots. Tuck's at 2.5 shots. That's plus 157. Tuch and Skinner for a point pays minus 105. Kreider, Tarasenko, and Mika Zibanejad for a point, 3-1. Kreider plus 180 for an assist. And Tarasenko for a point tonight, minus 118. That is my favorite of the bunch. So I'm going to take a look at round 3 of high stakes leagues here next on Game Plus Network. Let's take a look at high stakes leagues, NFBC drafts over the last 4 weeks of the season. People putting their hard-earned bucks on these drafts. And this is a look at round 3, the average draft position here. And you'll see Michael Harris, the second first player off the board on average, 28.29, his ADP, outfielder for the Atlanta Braves, an absolute stud. Jacob DeGrom, Sandy Alcantara, back-to-back pitchers here. We got Francisco Lindor, Nolan Arenado, the first reliever off the board at pick 31 on average, Edwin Diaz, reliever of the New York Mets, Jose Altuve, Spencer Strider, Marcus Semien, Brandon Woodruff, Emmanuel Clase, the second closer off the board. And then the Blue Jays' newest addition, Dalton Varsho, who's got catcher and outfield eligibility. I really like Varsho as a player. He's got some pop in his bat. I think he's going to be a nice addition to the Bluebirds. Going through this list, there's a couple here that I would target. DeGrom is very risky, of course. You know, you I mean, it could go either way, right? This guy's only played 28 games over the last 3 years, but his upside is through the roof. It's a little bit too risky for me. I'm probably out. I may have a share or two, but, you know, these high-stakes leagues, you can put your money where your mouth is, right? And for me, I'm a coward. I probably don't go that way. I'm not a big believer, to be honest. I don't think he's going to last a full season. I love Alcantara. I think he's an absolute stud. I'd rather take the safety there with Alcantara. You're not going to get the same sort of strikeout upside, but he is an absolute baller. Edwin Diaz, you know, you got to get yourself a really good closer, especially in these formats, rotisserie leagues. You're not going to win if you're in the bottom half of close saves. You have to be in the top half of saves. You know, Mets are going to win a lot of games. Diaz had a great season last year. I'm actually comfortable with Diaz. I probably pass on Clase, but both of those guys are certainly elite closers. I love Woodruff in this spot. He's probably my favorite target out of these pitchers. I think he's very underrated. This is the range where I would maybe consider taking my first pitcher off the board. I want to get some bats early. He's certainly one that I would consider. I love the upside of Strider, but I need to see it again. I need to see it again in year number two. I think he's a stud, but just need to see it one more time. A lot of other studs on this list as well. Harris is a good one. Lindor, Arenado, these are good picks as well. Probably out on Altuve. I think we've seen the best of him, and I'm not so much in on Semien, but Varsho, I think, is a really good target as well. One more segment here on Mean Streets, and we are going to play a clip from Pro versus Pro. It is Alex Blickle talking about one of his favorite plays in the Genesis Invitational. So that's next on Mean Streets. Have a good one, guys. Cheers.
My 200-1 outright on Gary Woodland. I feel like I know that I bet Gary a ton, but my main point here is, number one, you get the great signal for driving distance here and less signal than usual on driving accuracy. Both of those things clearly help him. You get the big signal on approach play. That's great. The downside is his around the green play and his putting have been downright terrible. So you're going to need some positive variance there. But I think the thing that draws me to him the most is you wouldn't really see it just looking at his overall results, because, you know, he gained quite a bit at the Houston Open 4 starts ago in November. Then he lost when he missed the cut at the Sony Open, lost when he made the cut, but finished terribly at the Farmers. And then with a 42nd place finish at the Waste Management, where he gained a little bit under a stroke per round overall. But he has been like kind of on the Ricky Fowler plan lately, where he's phenomenal one round and then he's terrible. Then he's phenomenal again and then he's terrible again. And the reason why that's encouraging to me is because we know that the really good Gary is there. He just needs to find that more frequently.